Welcome to the Coug Center Podcast, and here's your host.
Don't worry, I got an idea. An idea so smart my head would explode if I even began to know what I was talking about.
Michael Preston.
Ah, yes, hello, and welcome to another edition of the Coug Center Podcast. Feels good to be able to say another edition, doesn't it? Means more than one. We're plural right now, huh? Isn't that awesome? Coug Center Podcast here again for episode number 2 in 2013, and although we are in, well, I guess we could consider mid to late January right now, it's all about football still, because let's face it, the basketball team's not giving me too much to talk about now, are they? No, they are. They stink, but there's also, I'm leaving that analysis to Jeff and Kyle and Craig. They certainly know a little bit more about basketball than I do. Remember, I'm just the guy with some knowledge about everything, not a lot of knowledge about everything like those guys are. Got the opportunity to go down to Carson, California, not Carson City, Associated Press. Thank you very much. Carson, California, on Saturday to see Mr. Jeff Toole play in the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. Now, I didn't know quite what to expect out of Toole when I got there. I knew that looking over the roster, he was certainly the most talented quarterback, at least in my mind, on the national roster, Dane Crist. Out of Kansas, Charlie Weiss's favorite quarterback, also on that roster, also a young man, I believe Ryan Higgins from Fordham on the national roster. So I certainly thought he was the most talented quarterback the national team had. I believed he was going to get the start. He did get the start. And from the early going, we saw a familiar problem Toole has encountered over the years, and that's getting a lot of pressure from the defensive line. Now, this being a collegiate all-star game, meaning in theory this is a collection of very good players from all across the country, he was going to see some pressure, but in theory he also should have gotten some protection. But I think Toole's performance in that game really shined a nice light on how good of a quarterback he is. Obviously not able to do that over 4 years at Washington State, maybe as much as he would like to do, given a coaching change, injury problems, also quarterback starting flip-flopping he went through last year. So it was nice for him to be able to do that. Finished the day 8-for-8 with 64 yards of passing and one touchdown. Now, 8-for-8 is very good, obviously. Perfect on the day. Now, you're not going to, you know, it's a little easier to go perfect in a all-star game because these guys aren't running as complicated plays because you're only there for 3 days. But after the game, Dick Vermeil did say he really liked Toole's performance, and also speaking a little bit about Chris's performance as well.
Well, I don't think it's what we did well. It's what he's been preparing through college to come in and throw the ball. You know, we don't teach him to throw the ball. We try to give him a few simple plays if they can throw the ball well and get open play actions and nakeds and this kind of, and drop backs and throw the ball out there. But they came here with the ability to throw the ball accurately. And we tried to give him some time with pass protections and some very simple basic patterns that they could throw efficiently. And but they threw well all week. So I wasn't surprised that they threw the ball well tonight.
So ultimately, what does Toole get out of this? Well, at least he got on a national stage, got in front of some scouts that were there. I know there were some CFL scouts in attendance. I'm assuming there were some NFL scouts in attendance. I did not see any, but then again, I wasn't keeping my eyes that sharply peeled. This is the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl. So in theory, this game's going to keep getting traction. Didn't have too terribly many, you know, really headlining players. In fact, I would say Toole was probably amongst one of the headlines of the bowl. So kind of tells you where this game is at in terms of its relevance to a lot of NFL scouts. It's just not there yet. But with the backing of the NFLPA, it eventually will be. I thought Toole had a wonderful performance. And I think here are the key things for me that he showed on Saturday. He showed that his knee is completely healthy. Scrambled very nicely. Got out of pressure really well. His decision-making, excellent. On that touchdown pass, you saw him throw, but he threw a good ball into traffic, but he kind of threw it in there. You know, like when you're in traffic and you weave into that one spot where someone's left you open, you fit your car in there. That's what he did with the football on that play. Didn't take the underneath route that was wide open. He went in there, and he found the man in the end zone. Good decision-making. The other thing I think a little underrated that some scouts may have seen from him, he took snaps from under center the whole game. He was in shotgun occasionally, but he took snaps from under center a lot, and that's not something he did a lot of when he played for Paul Wolf in his later years and then for Mike Leach this year. That's just not something that happened for the last couple of years under Wolf, as I said, and especially not under Leach. So that's also very encouraging because in most NFL systems, you're going to be under center a majority of the time. And it's nice for Tool to be able to show that. Other than that, he looked very poised. He looked very crisp, very accurate. He looked about as good as he's looked in the last 4 years. And I think that's very encouraging from the standpoint of him getting drafted. Is he going to be drafted? Yeah, you know, I don't know. CBS Sports right now saying he's about the 19th best quarterback available in the draft. They expect him, if he's drafted at all, to go in the 7th round. He's got 3 months to change some minds. We'll see if he can do that. Coming up next here on the Kook Center podcast, we talked to the guys at Rock M Nation about Dave Yost's hiring at WSU. Got some great insight coming up for you on the newest coach on the WSU coaching staff. Stay with us right here on the Kook Center podcast. Welcome back to the Coug Center podcast. Joined very luckily, give us some perspective on Dave Yost's hiring at Washington State by Chris Harris from the always wonderful Rock M Nation. Chris, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I guess I'll start out here with it seemed like Coach Yost was pretty attached to Gary Pinkel at Missouri. So, how surprising was it for you guys? Regarding his departure, I mean, I think a lot of folks were pretty not taken aback by it, but that was a big surprise. So how much were you kind of caught off guard by it?
I was very caught off guard. I think everybody was very caught off guard. There had been some people calling for Dave Yost's head. Anytime after you have a bad offensive season, that will happen. But the idea that he would voluntarily resign against the wishes of Gary Pinkel was that really caught people off guard.
Okay, so I mean, this, you know, this was something that it kind of, like, you know, obviously any fans are going to react a little poorly, but first season in the SEC, and yeah, Missouri struggled a bit, but was it really all on Yost, or was it really just attributed to, you know, this is a change in conference to a much better football conference in the Big 12, you think?
Honestly, I don't even know that it was either of those. Obviously, the SEC is defensively a much stronger conference, but most people expected that our offensive numbers would go down. But we went from, you know, top 12 in the nation to, I believe, bottom 90, or under 90s. I mean, it was really terrible. We lost, I believe, this is just shooting from the hip, 7 of our top 10 offensive linemen, mm-hmm. and our starting quarterback missed about half the season. Mm-hmm. So I don't care who you are. If you're Alabama, you lose that much talent in the trenches and at the most key position on the field, your offense is going to suffer, and we definitely did. Sure. You saw a lot of breakdowns throughout the season in just basic blocking. Those did improve over time, but not enough. You know, between the talent and the experience, mm-hmm. we really struggled.
Now, Yost had been a good coach at Mizzou, obviously. So what made him such a great coach in years past? To you both, you know, on the field with his offenses and then maybe off the field recruiting-wise, what made him such a great coach at Mizzou?
Well, I think Yost made the big splash last year when he landed Dorial Green-Beckham, the number one recruit in the nation. He was the primary recruiter for him, and so that was a pretty big coup. And he's had some other big landing as well. He is the recruiting coordinator, or was a recruiting coordinator, and so I think you're going to get a really good recruiter there. What made him good as an offensive coach, you guys are really going to get someone who understands the spread and how, not just the spread, but how offenses create advantages across the field. And Yost was someone who understood that and who really innovated during his time at the University of Missouri. He said publicly he's excited about working with Leach, and I can certainly understand why he'd want to learn from somebody like Leach, but I also think you guys are going to get a lot of experience, particularly for a wide receivers coach, and a lot of experience with someone who knows what they're doing. And I can go into some specifics about that if you prefer.
We're talking about the spread not being exactly the same as an air raid offense that Mike Leach runs, but it does have some similarities. So, you know, it sounds like this, that Yost has a lot of things that he can bring to the table that, you know, an offense that's not exactly the same as what Mike Leach runs at Washington State, but it's something that's fairly similar. And he, you know, like you're going to say here, he was such an expert at it at Missouri that he can bring a heck of a lot to the table.
Right. Well, I mean, I think even, I correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not as much an expert on Leach's offense, but I have seen it run a few times because we played Texas Tech over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And most offenses are about creating an advantage at the point of attack and getting, and particularly in terms of the spread and in Leach's offense, getting skill players the ball in open space.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what Yost has really been an expert at doing at Missouri is figuring out a way to get the ball not only in open space but where you have a numbers advantage. And so constraining the defense to where they have to defend against, whether it's the quarterback keeping the ball or whether it's, you know, defending against an inside run and then you're tossing the ball out to a wide receiver. They run that play all the time at Missouri. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the bubble screen type play. They consider that an extension of the running game at Missouri. And it's all about just creating a numbers advantage. If you can get three wide receivers to two defenders out on the edge, or if they have to defend those wide receivers out on the edge, then all of a sudden you have a numbers advantage in the box. And so Yost is really in command of getting people, figuring out how to get those numbers in the box. Now, I don't know how much that his role is going to be like that at Washington State,
mm-hmm.
but I can tell you, as someone who coached the quarterbacks for a long time, he's very familiar with all the ins and outs of how wide receivers are going to need to run their routes, how they react to what the defense is giving them, how they adjust their routes, how they do the reads, you know, how the quarterbacks are going to do that communication with the wide receivers about body lean and,
sure.
You know, how you're turning your hips and your shoulders as to what route you're going to run. He's going to really be an expert on that. And so I think in terms of being able to coach up your wide receivers, you should be really good at that.
Well, and that's fantastic because that's pretty much what the air raid depends on, is having some pretty good receivers out there. So that's always a nice thing. The way you're describing Coach Yost, it sounds like this is a guy that Gary Pinkel probably isn't going to be easy to replace. Is that a fair statement for the status now at Missouri?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we have some other talent on there, but you've seen Pinkel had the same staff for about 15 years, and over the last few years he's lost a little bit to attrition, and so all that expertise he's now starting to have to bring in new people and teach them. And so the people that he's still got in there I think are going to be quality people, but losing a person of quality of Yost is a big deal. I don't think it's an accident that you saw people like Leach, and you saw Gundy at Oklahoma State, you saw Clemson. There's some top offenses that wanted him to come in, and some of them wanted to come in as an offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's a mistake that he was highly sought after. In the SEC preseason, a lot of people picked him as the best offensive coordinator in the conference. So he's definitely someone that knows offense. He's someone that has a history of developing quarterbacks. Obviously, that's a little different than wide receivers, but, you know, if you understand the quarterback position, you're going to understand the wide receiver position.
Okay.
So I think you're going to get a lot of quality out of him.
This is a guy that Mizzou fans, I think, you know, you mentioned earlier some, you know, them being a little disappointed with the offense this past season, some asking for his job. This is a guy that it sounds like fans, you know, it's kind of like, you know, once something's gone, you didn't realize how good you had it when you did have it. Is this kind of that situation where Missouri fans, you know, maybe wanted him gone, but once he is gone, they didn't quite know just how good they had it with Dave Yost?
Well, I guess history will tell us whether that's the case.
But that's true,
I think,
yeah.
A lot of people that were, you know, not really reactionary and had a little bit of patience with the injury problems this year were really sad to see him go and surprised to see him go. I mean, Gary Pinkel's known for loyalty to his staff. And there's a lot of questions about what was happening behind closed doors there. I don't have access to any inside information, my sense was it was a combination of both the stress of being in such a high-profile position,
mm-hmm.
and during a very difficult time, and possibly there might have been some interpersonal things there as well, which is surprising given how long they were together,
sure.
If that would be the case. Yost is not without shortcomings. You know, a lot of people will criticize play calling when the offense is not going well, but I think with Yost, what you would see from him is many times he would call call plays in a way where he would try to get the offense at its full potential. And what I mean by that is sometimes the defense might give you something that's worth 3 or 4 yards on every play, but he would want to go for the big yardage because he knows the offense is capable of that. He wants to have the Oregon-style offense when sometimes the defense is just giving you 3 or 4 yards at a time. Mm-hmm. And he's not always willing to take that those easy yards, right, you know, when the defense is giving it. And he's known for that kind of floppy golden hair, which is his trademark. He understands that's his brand. That's what he's known mm-hmm. for. I honestly think lately it's looked a little bit less fashionable than it did a few years back.
Now see.
He's gotten kind of skinny. And
yep, you're jumping ahead to my next question was going to be, how glorious, I guess now the question would be, how glorious was that hair back in its heyday? Because, I mean, we see pictures of him now. I mean, the guy has locks I am jealous of. How glorious is or was that hair in its heyday?
Well, honestly, it used to look really cool. I mean, he would come in with the visor on and he'd be like, oh, that guy is like a surfer. I mean, the college kids ate that up, or the high school kids ate that up. Right?
Yeah.
And he was just kind of cool and hip, and he wasn't a stuffy old ball coach, right?
Yeah.
Now, honestly, it looks a little bit scary to me. I mean, his hair's standing out a little bit. It's not quite so bushy. He looks kind of like an aging hippie.
Okay. So what you're saying is an appointment at the Pullman Supercuts would probably be in order for him.
Well, that would be my advice to him.
Okay.
But, you know, it's his brand, so I'll let him decide whether he wants to look like an aging hippie or if he still thinks he looks like a surfer.
All right, I'll let you go with another softball. Be honest with me here. After Remember the Titans came out, how many Coach Yost jokes got made? I know he's an offensive coach, but there had to be something about don't you let them gain another yard. And just, you're a Hall of Famer in my... How many Remember the Titans jokes did you guys make?
Honestly, I don't think I heard any of those.
Oh.
But
good, we'll be the first people to jump all over it then.
Maybe I'm not the right person to ask.
Okay. Well, then we'll be the first people to jump all over it. Chris Harris from Rock M Nation, thank you so much for joining me, Chris.
All right, good luck next season.
All right, thank you. We'll be right back to wrap up the Kook Center podcast right after this. Wrapping things up here on the Coug Center podcast, I want to just dive briefly into women's basketball extending a not-so-glorious streak. Now, 36 straight losses to the University of Washington after 2 straight losses to them in Pac-12 play in the last week. That was Sunday and Tuesday. We'll dive into this a little bit more next week, especially after this week's Pac-12 action from the women. But is June Doherty the coach at WSU, meaning is she going to be the person to lead them to the promised land? I'm not as convinced as I once was about that, but we'll dive into that a little bit more on next week's podcast. In the meantime, a brand new segment we're introducing this week as we'll probably introduce a new segment every week, but, you know, by week 52, it's just going to be too crowded. So, but we are introducing a new one this week. It is the Dunderhead of the Week.
God, freaking idiot.
And what do I mean by Dunderhead? Just someone who made a boneheaded move or someone who, you know, irked me. That's all, you know, really that's all it has to be. If you make me angry, you can get on this. But there's really no requirement. But we are going to start out with a couple of thieves in Ohio. They stormed into a Chinese restaurant. The poor woman at the cash register runs into the back, calls police. They're waving a gun around, and they leave. Why? Couldn't figure out how to work the cash register. Guys, if you're going to plan a robbery like that, well, I can't figure out how do you get there's not like an eject button or something. Just bash at it until the drawer opens. I'm pretty sure that's an acceptable way to do it. This is a special two-part Dunderhead of the Week, though, because, and I don't want to seem cruel here, but the second one is going to my mother. Now, why is it going to my mom? I'm not complaining about, you know, anything stupid here. This is about her having too much pride on Sunday when we were in Disney's California Adventure. Visiting for the weekend with my sister, she decided that, yes, she could go on that, the California Screamin' Roller Coaster, even though she knew it could cause her to become nauseated. No, I can do it. She did it. And we sat on the bench for 15 minutes while she took sips of water and took deep breaths. Mom, I love you, but you didn't have to do it. There was like no line. You could have just waved goodbye to us, saved yourself the misery. But no, you had to get on the roller coaster, didn't you? I love you to death, Ma, but nah, didn't have to do that. I still would have loved you. That's all we got this week on the Kook Center Podcast. Next week, more fun, more hilarity, and more me. That's the most important thing, right? Right here on KookCenter.com.